This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 51, and I'm delighted to welcome James Sherwin-Smith, CEO of Growth Street, to dive into business overdrafts. Okay, so do you think that sounds dull? Putting this into context, overdrafts are the most commonly used form of financing for small to medium businesses in the UK. So getting them right, both in terms of availability and pricing, is absolutely vital to the functioning of the real economy in which we all live. Greg Carter, one of the founders of Growth Street, was working as a VC at Arts Alliance, the firm behind such winners as Love Film and Shazam. He found that many of his portfolio companies struggled to open basic overdraft facilities from banks. It was from this experience of pain that the idea for Growth Street emerged as a non-bank alternative for SMEs. To make a definitional point, to an FS guy like myself, an overdraft is something which comes from a bank. And indeed, banks first did business overdrafts in 1728 and have been doing a lot of it since. Only banks can offer an overdraft, and thus a non-bank fintech can't. However, a fintech is perfectly able to issue loans, and if this is structured as a facility, which you can call upon on demand when needed to a pre-agreed limit, well, frankly, it'll just be easier to call that an overdraft on the show. Furthermore, with my emphasis that fintechs that survive the hype phase will be those that have solid engineering under their shiny bonnets, it's interesting to note that Growth Street spent over a year of testing and development to ensure that their systems and processes are as robust as they can be. Quite the opposite vibe to the tech land grab strategy of launch, flag wave, and fix all the bugs when underway. Growth Street will offer facilities up to £500,000 to UK limited companies. Applications take 15 minutes online with a decision in 3 days and only charge a monthly fee when the facility is being used. Rather different from a bank, what? For all you historians of the capital markets out there, there is something akin to the whole set of historic non-banking capital markets acronyms such as RUFs, NIFs, SNIFs, and all the other ones I've forgotten. However, let's leave such medieval complexity behind and dive into the far simpler fintech world of getting a simple, on-demand borrowing facility. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi, James. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Mike. And thank you, too, for the opportunity to discuss business overdrafts. And I must say, congratulations on the half century. The 50 shows milestone for London FinTech Podcast is a fantastic achievement.
Yes, well, thank you for that. In cricketing analogy terms, which will probably work for about 0.5% of the audience, given how international we are, in cricketing terms, I've scored a 50 in the most tedious way possible, scoring one run at a time rather than hitting any six. But maybe I shall go away and think about how I can do six in one go. We were talking before about what we're up to at the weekend, and I was busy being on a 40-foot yacht, losing my hat, which is bad news in my context.
And a good tan to boot for those listening in.
Absolutely. 10 degrees hotter than average in the UK at the weekend, so it was 26 degrees. I'm busy being shouted at by the skipper for getting roughly everything wrong, so this is in tune with my entire life. And you were telling me that you were having a more businessy orientated weekend in terms of some startup weekend. What was that all about?
Yeah. No, it was. It was a very fintech-focused weekend for me. We had a new code release for Growth Street, which we deployed on Saturday, so a lot of tech hands to the pump then. And also managed to put an appearance in at London FinTech Startup Weekend here in London, which is an opportunity for people with ideas to come get in a room with other interested people from a biz dev, a design, and from a coding background, and put together some new ideas for startups in the fintech space. So Growth Street was a sponsor of that, and it was great to be able to help out and mentor some of those companies.
Well, that's interesting. So what was your main takeaway of that, being somebody who's sort of been in financial services for quite a while? Was the average ideas sort of good but impractical, or impractical but good, or whatever I mean?
I think you had all on that kind of 2x2 matrix. What I'm stunned by is the number of ideas that come round and round that you've seen before.
For example, business overdrafts.
Well, indeed, right? And necessity is the mother of invention, but ultimately it comes from a very similar need. So it was fascinating to see so many ideas for companies that I've seen others have come up with before, have tried, and it's fascinating to see how people are trying to do it with a different spin and think through how they could be successful where others have failed.
Yes, it's an interesting point because I think ecology is a very important metaphor for much of the business world. And I remember a paper by Andy Haldane talking about the ecology of financial services and how it had got worse because you've got an ecology which has got fewer big players. So as an ecologies like that are really tied in and something goes wrong, the whole thing goes down, as opposed to ecologies where there's lots of speciation and niches. But picking up the overdraft as an example, whatever the need is to which for the last 300, 400 years business overdrafts has been the solution, that need is a business need. And even if you break that ecology up into four segments or whatever, it's still the same ecology. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised. And I think it comes back to the innovation word, which is a very dangerous word, and we all get fed up of it after a while. An innovation such as the smartphone is actually a very rare type of innovation.
I think that's absolutely right. And I find fintech as a concept and as a word quite an interesting one because...
Is that a metaphor for a stupid one?
Well, no. I find that there's clearly a lot of attention focused on the disruptive capability of new technologies applied within financial services. But when I think to the deployment of technology in financial services, it started with the abacus.
Yeah.
It's been going on for a long, long time. I think the real game changer is, to your point, the ubiquitous technology that pervades all our lives, and that is predominantly the smartphone, more than anything else.
And the expectations that we as consumers build up by just using apps that do things simply.
Well, that's it. I mean, and what the smartphone is a fantastic platform to host a number of different niche apps that are focused on a specific need for a specific audience. And one of the things that really hit me, I took a sabbatical from a consulting job for a year and worked in a mobile healthcare startup that was really looking at how you can improve communication within the healthcare industry. And you look at all these kind of top-down initiatives, whether it be government-sponsored or somebody else, to try and force a single platform on a whole system with a million and one different use cases. And I was thinking, actually, the best way to achieve that is bottom-up, by having a ubiquitous platform like a smartphone. We have a specific app for a specific need. So it might be, you know, pediatric cardiology, right? It only be useful with a number of people. But what it does is it breaks down the typical app delivery model, which is through an app store. Because in that context, popular is not synonymous with useful.
Mm.
And so actually to find something that's very specific to your need is actually very difficult unless you've got a very powerful search.
Let's say you're a kidney person, you need dialysis, then that's a very specific thing that's not going to be popular, but it's going to be invaluable to those people
exactly.
who are on dialysis and need some parameters or something like that. So you mentioned the fact that you're, amongst other things, a management consultant by background who rather pervade the fintech scene. I'm never quite sure why they do so well, but they do well. I think maybe there's some sort of systematic thinking or bullshit or actually deep insight or combination of all the above.
I think what it is actually is I think you have the opportunity to learn from so many others' mistakes.
Ah, that's interesting, yes. And you also get the top-down view of companies and these kind of things. But yours is an interesting story leading into the sort of Growth Street one, which is that the average young / relatively young fintech, one of the founders takes over as CEO. So what's your story there? Because you weren't one of the founders, although you're there pretty much at the beginning.
That's right. So I was hired in by the founding team approximately a year or so into the story of Growth Street. So Growth Street's first customer was in July 2014. And I joined as CEO in May of 2015. So I'm just over a year in the job now. But I joined a team that had identified a problem, they'd run a proof of concept, they got excited about the opportunity, had secured further investment, but that time was saying, right, which one of us is the right person to lead this? And decided the answer to that was actually to go out and find someone in the marketplace to come in and take the reins.
Which is a very mature perspective, and going back to sort of grown-up FS with a VC background, I think, you know, those kind of people have the mentality of saying, okay, look, we're all actually quite good at football, but none of us wants to be the centre forward and is particularly good at heading the ball in goal from a corner.
I often make reference to the organisational paradigm, which is kids football.
Right.
And you have to be very careful in a startup that you don't...
Or run after the ball.
Exactly. Right, you have to hold your structure, you have to have a goalkeeper, you have to have a defence, a midfield, and an attacking lineup. But you also need a manager.
So you're kind of the Abramovich of the business overdraft market, are you?
Well, I'd like to be the Claudio Ranieri, but...
Oh, yes, of course, the Leicester City.
Yeah.
For non-UK listeners who are actually 60% of the audience these days, there's a small, formerly fairly rubbish football team in the UK who is pretty much unheard of, who were 5,000 to one outsiders who happened to win the league this year. So that's a good example. So moving into this fascinating world of overdrafts, maybe we can just define overdraft, because as I say, in the UK, they're the most popular form of business funding. But as there are now something like getting on for 140 countries in the world that people listen to this to, markets do vary from place to place. So I mentioned in the beginning that, you know, what an overdraft is here and how we're just using it as a shorthand for facility. But kind of what is an overdraft in this context?
Yes, of course. So predominantly, businesses in the UK have been using overdrafts, and an overdraft is effectively the ability to borrow against your current account, your transactional account or checking account, as you might know it, in the United States. So the ability to operate a transactional account, but basically be able to go into the red and to borrow when you need it and be charged interest on your borrowing as you use it, when you use it. And that has been the common financing route for short-term working capital for businesses, really since the beginning of a checking account here in the UK. What you have in the corporate world is a thing called a revolving credit facility, which is effectively just the borrowing line of that service. So you'd be set up with a facility with a limit, and then you could draw down against that limit and repay it at will, and you would only be charged interest typically on what you borrow when you borrow. But interestingly, in the UK, some of the banks we've spoken to said we only do that for facilities of, you know, millions of pounds at once, so, you know, £30 million or more. And so if you aren't able to get an overdraft, you're into quite a limited set of short-term working capital solutions. Listeners in the United States might be very familiar with this as what's called a line of credit. And you can get one as a consumer, typically backed against home equity or as a business. But we've never really had that product class here in the UK. So without the overdraft, businesses are a little bit stuck in finding something that satisfies a short-term working capital need.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, although perhaps it wasn't made that explicit, the whole disintermediation, as it's called, of banking, I'll use the word in inverted commas, we've been through that before, because the whole Eurobond markets, which grew up in the sort of 60s and 70s around exchange controls, but carried on and is now just known as the bond market, they came up with a non-banking way of approaching this in terms of all these rough sniffs, etc., which is basically note issuance facilities. So if you couldn't, and this is probably for much larger companies, but if you couldn't get a bank to give you a letter of credit or whatever, or if you didn't like the price, then actually the capital markets guys would do something through the market. And we'll come back in a few minutes to Growth Street Solution, which is a marketplace one in itself. So as usual, there are sort of iterations of this that go around.
Absolutely. And it's actually, in our eyes, it's a market failure which has created this opportunity for Growth Street to try and step in and solve what we perceive as an overdraft crisis. Because what we've seen in the statistics, and really we've only had them available since the financial crisis, when politicians and others have really said, what is going on, that we can recognise that the bank supply of overdrafts has dried up significantly. So the Bank of England produces statistics based on small business borrowing through overdrafts, and that's dropped from 21 billion to almost 13 billion in the matter of 3.5 years. So it's almost a 40% drop. And also the British Bankers Association now produce quarterly SME statistics. Within that, you can actually see the number of approved facilities on a monthly basis. And if you look at that trajectory on a rolling 12-month basis, it's down almost 50%, 50%, in the number of approved facilities. And we are confident this is not a shortage of business demand, because when you look at some of the research and investigations that others have conducted, particularly, for example, the Competition and Markets Authority here in the UK, who are concerned that there are adverse effects on competition of the supply of banking services, their research shows that the vast majority of businesses want an overdraft, but very few of them can actually get one.
Absolutely. So we need to just briefly, because it's an old topic really, but ask you why you think this is the case. I mean, in early fintech speak, the hypesters were going out there saying, oh, that's because banks are crap, aren't they? You know, they're really nasty people and really evil, all this kind of stuff. Whereas actually, from a more grown-up perspective, when the rules of games change, so does the behaviour. So, for example, going back to games, rugby came from football when someone, wasn't it Eton or somewhere, or maybe it was rugby school, actually picked up the ball and ran with it, which of course is not allowed in football, but from that a new game arose, and actually then people ran around carrying the ball. And in the same way, I don't particularly buy the fact that all bankers are evil. You know, hundreds of thousands of people work in banks, and all they're stupid or anything like that. So are there any rational reasons why this has happened?
There are. I think I would break them into two. One, specifically overdrafts, and second of all, investment in SME. So why have we seen this shortage in supply of overdrafts from banks? Well, it's actually down to the rules they have to abide by. So Basel III now capital rules suggest that as a bank, you have to hold capital against the limit of an overdraft, not against the utilised balance.
So for example, I take out an overdraft facility of $1 million, but actually I never use more than a couple of grand or $5,000 at the time.
Yep.
And you're a bank in this context. You, the bank, has to put a whole ton of capital against that, just in case the worst happens every day going forwards, which it doesn't.
That's exactly right. You take that into the context of also being a sustained low interest rate environment. And you can understand from the bank's perspective, this is a pretty poor trade. The time average utilisation of an overdraft we believe to be approximately 50% based on the BBA statistics. So from a bank's perspective, providing lending via an overdraft looks to be twice as expensive as any other form of lending from a bank's perspective. So no surprise they've said actually we're taking away overdrafts and we're diverting people into other sorts of finance products.
Term loans, for example.
Yeah, so the second point then is just around the bank's ability to invest, because yes, there's this wonderful world of fintech. There's lots of different ways that banks could be investing into trying to solve this very real business need. But if you look at the range of things they're having to do right now, again, largely regulatory driven, compliance issues post the crisis, ring fencing here in the UK where retail and commercial banks are having to be split in two. Unfortunately, the size of the SME market relative to the retail market and the corporate market means SME often falls between two stools and is not being invested in the ways you would anticipate. It's been, 10 years now, I think, since the iPhone was developed. There are some SMEs in the UK that still can't get mobile banking. That's the nature of the underinvestment in SMEs. And we think of it almost like an apple being divided in two with this ring fencing issue in particular. Half the apple is going to retail, half the apple is going to corporate. And the core and the pips are being thrown away. Unless you plant the pips, you don't get more trees, you don't get more apples. And I think that analogy works because SMEs are the ones that are hiring people, employing people that need to get paid salaries. SMEs are the ones that ultimately one day grow up into being corporates. And so we're concerned that unless you look after the SMEs, it actually holds back the economy and the growth of the wider economy. And that's why we think Growth Street and what we're trying to do is so important.
Absolutely, it's a really important market. I mean, so why are overdrafts so important? I mean, we mentioned a bit earlier that there's a certain cultural or per country basis here. You know, in the UK, this is how it works. Somewhere else, it works differently. So if I'm the London Fintech Podcast Limited, then I'm highly likely to use an overdraft for my funding. But that has a bit of a feel to me of using my credit card for funding. It's not always the best route, certainly via banks, which is no doubt why Growth Street is there. But what is the alternative? Why do they use them?
Well, hopefully everyone's familiar with the concept of if you don't manage cash flow efficiently, it limits your growth. But it might be worth just breaking down why that's the case. So overdrafts are important because it gives you access to short-term borrowing. And largely, you only pay for what you use when you use it. If you don't have access to an overdraft, you've really only got two choices. You either hold on to cash to get you through a seasonal dip, or you look to raise finance through a different route, which is likely to be less flexible, potentially more expensive, and often much more complex.
So for example, you mean invoice financing, where the fintechs have come along to try and make that simpler?
It could be a range of different finance products. Take, for example, a fixed term loan. The issue is this. Imagine we're all very familiar from a consumer mindset, which is most of us get paid a salary, get it paid on a regular basis, typically monthly, and we have to live within our means. And if we don't have enough money left at the end of the month, we borrow short term, but knowing full well, we're about to get paid a salary and therefore we pay back what we borrow. Businesses have the opposite problem. They regularly have to pay outgoing. They have to pay payroll. They have to pay VAT. They may have to pay for rent, etc. So they have a very regular, dull set of outgoing payments. But when they get paid and how much is very rarely in their control. So if you don't have access to that short-term buffer to get you through the times when you're in the red because you're waiting to be paid, then you have to find finance through another route or you have to hold on to cash. If you hold on to cash, there is a massive opportunity cost. And it limits your growth because that money sitting there in your bank account is not being reinvested in your business. It's not hiring more people. It's not buying more machines or technology, and it's limiting your growth profile. And if you find an alternative form of finance where you maybe take a big slug of capital that you're paying for even when you don't need it, then that just adds to your costs and also limits your retained earnings and limits your growth. So this is why we think a short-term working capital facility is so essential because without it, you don't grow as efficiently as you could.
Absolutely. So moving on to the fintech non-bank overdraft solution to this, and as you know quite a lot about it, let's take Growth Street as a good example. I mean, there aren't, I think, that many to choose from. There are many fintechs out there that will provide various kind of financing solutions, but in terms of this one. So how does the Growth Street model of non-bank facility or overdraft, let's just call it overdraft work? So I'm the London Fintech Podcast, I want £100,000 facility for cash flow, yada yada. So what would I do?
So I think the first thing to recognise is what are we doing differently and what's changed. So banks had a kind of a stranglehold in this market for a number of reasons. There were regulatory barriers. There was a high cost to technology. There was the kind of lack of availability of capital. It was typically a product that was bundled in with other products and services. And they had this huge distribution footprint. What they also had was an information advantage in that they had data on SMEs and their behaviours. And that was something they held quite closely and wasn't available. So what we're doing differently is we are using a marketplace model, which opens up not only the access to capital, but also is a way that we can operate in a way where we're not regulated like a bank.
So if I come to you for a facility and I get it, because for some reason you guys have an aberration and give it to a poor credit like me, when I need the money in August, some punters on the other side will be putting their funds in and making the return, and you're operating literally the marketplace.
That's exactly it. So the way this works is if you were a borrower on the Growth Street platform, you'd be set up with an account. When you wanted to draw down, you would log in securely to our website and you would place a drawdown request. That would raise a borrow order on our exchange, and you'd be matched with a lend order, someone that has money they wanted to lend to borrowers. You'd be matched on a best execution basis. That means you as a borrower get the best price that day, and that sets up a loan agreement between the two of you. Hence, it's a marketplace. It's connecting businesses to businesses. And that, therefore, provides you with the capital, and you would get money out the same day. Over in the UK, we have the Faster Payments Network, which means if you, say, made a request for £100,000, that £100,000 would be in your account same day, ready for you to pay your suppliers, whatever it was you needed that money for.
And the interesting thing about this one is that I would assume that, say, compared to Funding Circle, which everyone will know, if you go and borrow money on Funding Circle as an SME, you might borrow it for 3 years or something, and you've got the same amount and all that kind of thing, and the investors have got a very sort of simple transaction. In this case, let's say my borrowing things fluctuate, I have to pay huge salaries at the end of the month, and you're saying yada, yada, yada. So I've got fairly complex cash flow profile requirements, and on the other side, the investors got quite a cash management issue himself, because yep. One of the problems with marketplaces in general can be for investors, they've got a cash drag, i.e. you got your money, you bung it into whatever it is, Zopa, Funding Circle, something, but actually some of it sits there for quite a while before it's invested. In a sense, the investors on your platform have got quite a challenge in terms of cash keeps coming back to them and going out of them, and you know, it's like the tide keeps going in and out. So I presume that for them to do that and put up with it, they actually demand a higher rate. They should demand a higher rate.
So I think we mitigate that in two ways. I think first of all, we provide lenders with the ability to register their investor preferences. So they may choose to park money in the client money account and say, I want to earn this yield. And therefore they recognize that unless the market moves to that rate, their money will not be deployed. Others will choose to say, I'd like to float with the market rate. So reinvest my money whenever it comes in and it just goes out again at the market rate. That allows us to not only meet whatever the lender demand is for what their yield is, but it also allows us to recycle money quite quickly to satisfy the borrower demand. It also means that for those lenders that are holding out for a better rate, we're storing up liquidity. So should there be an influx of borrowers saying we'd like to draw down, we have liquidity stored up, albeit at an increasing price. So I think that's the first way, and that may be familiar to listeners of yours. It's very similar kind of experience, I guess, to say RateSetter in that regard. So you as a lender are placing a money order, you're saying, I'd like to place this money on the market, and once it's matched, it's used. When it's not matched, it's returned, and then it can be reinvested. Now, ultimately, yes, there is a marketplace at work. You have to match borrower demand with lender supply. But what we've seen from our initial test and learn is that we see that borrowers have radically different profiles in terms of the seasonality of their own business, but also the seasonality across the portfolio. And by building a relatively modest portfolio, we can actually manage out those spikes in liquidity demand and mean that the lenders there on the marketplace are getting a reliable return. That's what our initial test and learn has shown.
And what sort of, I mean, it obviously varies per credit, but do you have any sort of simple number that across the portfolio at the moment, the yield to investors is X percent?
Yes, so one of the things that we're doing at Growth Street, I think perhaps sets us apart from others operating this type of borrower capability, but also more broadly, I think, in the SME marketplace world, particularly here in the UK, is Growth Street operates a provision fund.
Like RateSetter.
Indeed. So what we're doing there is basically saying from the very first pound you invest as a lender, you get full diversification benefit of the whole portfolio. And that provision fund has been designed with a capital structure that's actually very close to the tier one capital ratio of a bank to mitigate losses as best as possible. Yes, in the event that the provision fund was exhausted, capital is at risk.
In which case, correct myself, you're more like the Zopa model, because the Zopa model of a provision fund, let's call it provision fund, they call it safeguard fund. In the Zopa model, there's a provision fund there. So if I happen to have lent money to somebody and he's happened to stop paying it back, oh dear, the provision fund will actually make up the money. So I'm unimpaired until the provision fund runs out and it says, oh, sorry, Mike, we've run out of provision fund. That's the one model. The other model, the rate setter model, which is why I corrected myself to you've got the Zopa model. The rate setter model, when it runs out of money, pulls everybody's investments, which is a little bit more challenging, and I think the FCA is...
We have a number of different models out there, and I know the FCA have a challenge on their hands with the 84-plus different interim permission holders.
There's no such thing as the provision fund. Yeah, terms and conditions apply.
There's no single model, and I think what the platforms have done here in the UK is adapt and evolve the approach to meet whatever their marketplace needs. But I think from our perspective, we are storing up liquidity from a different set of lenders with different profiles, with different needs and expectations, and that gives us a diversity of a lending mix. If anything we've learned in the last 10 years, never be reliant on a single source of capital.
Absolutely. So just come back to the provision fund. So obviously credit is relevant in this case. So yes. Taking my example, where the London Fintech Podcast Limited wants a 100 grand facility, well, firstly, you'd be crazy to give it to me. And if you did, on a credit scale of A to F, I'd probably be sort of, you know, omega minus. How does credit come into this equation? Because obviously you have to assess the credit and security and things like that. What's your approach to security,
correct,
credit, mumble, mumble?
Correct. One thing we have to note, and I alluded to this about banks to start with, they're very proprietorial about SME data, is there's just been a paradigm shift in the availability of SME performance data. So what we require borrowers to do is to share performance data with us. We don't have access to their current account. We're not the bank. We don't control it. We don't see that transactional data. But what we see is something much more powerful in our eyes, which is the line-by-line item in their accounts. That shows us the accounts receivables position, the accounts payable position, etc. And what that allows us to do is to see not only what is happening now, but that data and its granularity allows us to forecast forward with a great deal more accuracy. So we can understand what's going to happen in the future. And that information that the businesses share with us, we actually share back as insights to them. We do that in the form of a cash flow forecast. So they can actually see over the next 30 to 90 days, depending on how much data they share and depending on the nature of the business, we can give them visibility to what the future holds. And that information from our perspective is not only helping the business make better decisions, so that actually reduces their credit risk, but it also gives us just a broader understanding of the context of the business, and it gives lenders a better understanding of what's happening too. So what we have here is matching that very granular data with a product which allows us to evaluate, is the risk rate correct? Is the limit correct? Is the drawdown request they make appropriate? By bringing both of those two things to bear, we end up with much more accurate risk measurement, but also more active risk management. If you were to go out on the marketplace today as a business and raise finance for your business, and it was then paid back over 5 years, someone would be making a point-in-time decision about you now, about what the future holds.
So they'd have to be conservative and they have to charge more.
What we can do is we can evaluate throughout the length of relationship of you being a borrower on our platform, and that allows us to vary the rate and vary the limit. So if your business is getting better and better and better, and you're going up the credit spectrum, we're basically saying, Mike, this is your rate now. You're getting better, so there's a better rate for you and there's a larger limit.
And what, going back to the lack of assets of the podcast other than the microphones, what security do you generally take in these circumstances?
So ultimately where we, I think, punch above our weight is we help businesses that are data rich but maybe physical asset poor. The way the banks would look at this market in the past is they'd go, Mike, What does London FinTech Podcast own?
Have you got a printing press in the background?
Do you own property? Do you have plant and machinery? If you don't, then what personally do you have? And I think what's fascinating in the UK in particular, I'm sure is seen in other markets around the world, is we have a very service-based economy here in the UK. So what Grow Street do is we look through at the quality of the cash flows within the business. What we also do, though, is we do take security against the business. So we only work with limited companies on both sides of our marketplace. And that means from a borrower perspective, Grow Street Provision Fund is a security trustee in that they hold a charge over your business. If we're going to lend you a six-figure sum, and if your business goes bankrupt, we reserve the right to try and recover as much money on behalf of lenders as possible. And it's by doing that that we're able to drive down the cost of borrowing for you as a business.
And you said a fascinating thing there, which is limited companies on both sides. So I presume I could be, and presumably there needs to be a new word for this, coming back to new ecological ideas, I presume I could both have a facility from you but invest my spare cash with you. And there must be somehow some way of putting those two things together and making it something completely different, if you know what I mean.
There is the ability for you to be a borrower and a lender on our marketplace.
A bit like a savings account where you can overdraw off the savings account, i.e. when I'm in credit, I'm getting some interest back, and when I'm in debit, I'm paying interest.
What we've seen so far is it's far more likely that a business will use one side of the marketplace at different points in time.
Absolutely.
Than running them both simultaneously, because in effect, the market rate is working on a 30-day match at the heart of the model. And you, as a borrower, can repay as soon as you like. You're not charged any extra. You only pay for what you use when you use it. So if you do end up with excess funds, you'll be paying down your position as a borrower and then re-entering the marketplace as a lender, getting a better return on your money at bank.
Interesting. It's a bit like playing ping pong with yourself. So we've been talking around the fact here that the underlying engine here that's being used in a motor car which does business overdrafts is a marketplace model. Marketplace models have been around probably for the Syrian Empire and before, and there's lots of sort of blah blah out there. So just briefly, one of the extreme views on marketplaces is it's the answer to everything. And then briefly, the opposite end of the spectrum is, oh, marketplaces have had it once the sort of banks get their shit together and stop being overregulated and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So what's a little bit more nuanced view of it's perfect or it's terrible? And is it going to sort of, you know, persist to what degree?
So I definitely think the marketplace models are here to stay. And why? Because ultimately, for marketplace models to function correctly, they have to provide information. And what marketplaces are doing are breaking down this information asymmetry today. They're providing greater transparency. And what that does is actually it builds trust, and it means that you end up in a virtual cycle, which is if a customer trusts the business, they share more information. If they share more information, you can be more helpful back. And if you're more helpful back, they build trust and they want to share more information. And in my eyes, banks have always done it the opposite way. They've got a declining circle because they take information in, they work out how they can charge you more. That annoys you, therefore there's a breach of trust, and therefore you're less willing to share information with them, and it becomes a downward spiral. And I think marketplaces work in the opposite direction, which I think is why they're definitely here to stay. They're clearly not inhibited by the legacy systems. Banks are only three things, right? They're people, their premises, and their technology. And what you realize with digital models is you don't need the people, you don't need the premises to the same degree. And typically they're using new technology, so they don't have some of the legacy issues that many banks are lumbered with today. But to our point right at the beginning of the podcast, and to your point about Syrian marketplaces back in the day, to many degrees, you could argue that marketplaces are just digital mutuals. They are trying to do something. They're trying to work for both sides of the marketplace. They're trying to help both sets of customers, whether they're a borrower or a saver. They're trying to deliver something for both sides. And if they're going to deliver a better deal to both sides of the marketplace, they have to be super efficient. And that's got to be a good thing. So I believe that the marketplace model is undoubtedly here to stay.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, and going back to these NIFs, RUFs, TRUFs, all that kind of stuff, the Eurobond markets have certainly been here to stay ever since they were created. The essence of markets, marketplaces that are successful is two things. The first is obvious, which is liquidity. And the second is less obvious, certainly to the equity crowdfunding lot, or a lot of the equity crowdfunding lot, sadly, which, as you say, is that marketplace is about the provision of information, something the stock exchange worked out a long time ago. Hence all these apparently tedious listing requirements, reporting requirements. But what it does mean is that if you're investing in BP, you find out a hell of a lot about BP, unlike, as I say, the equity crowdfunding. But let's move on, just wrapping up with Grow Street here. We've heard quite a lot about what you're doing and how you're doing and all that kind of stuff. So maybe it's quite good to wrap up with who should give you a go and give you a call? You know, where are you the best approach for SMEs and where is it less relevant for an SME? And also maybe what's going on in the future, James?
Yeah, absolutely. So we believe Growth Street is just a better way to finance and grow your business. We're focused on helping UK limited companies, so those are incorporated here in the UK. We're focused on helping businesses that want to grow and they see the merits in responsible borrowing. And they see that as an enabler of their future growth. And to do so, they are prepared to share information and to be transparent with the platform in order to get themselves a better deal. I think if you compared us to what a bank can offer, well, first of all, few banks are actually offering the overdraft product anymore. But what we find is we are typically able to offer a larger facility than a bank would be able to do. And that's because we're looking at the underlying performance of the business rather than its physical assets. We're also just more responsive. My favourite customer quote to date is, we had money in the bank from Growth Street before we could even get a meeting with our bank.
The great soundbite.
No, it's a great quote.
We'll tweet that one.
I'm very...
grateful to your father for saying that.
Yeah, grateful. Well, I can say who it is. It was Justin at a company called Lunchtime. It's featured as one of the customer stories on our website. I think if you look at some of the other alternatives, so fixed term loans work as a slug of capital, but they're typically for a structural long-term need. And we find that if you're looking for a short-term need, they're actually a very expensive way to get it because you end up paying for money you don't need most of the time. And then we obviously were aware of the various flavors of invoice finance. But what I would ask businesses listening to this to think about is really think about the flexibility and the cost of those facilities, not just the finance cost, but the administrative cost as well. Because what we find when we talk to customers is they're just not aware of all the fees they're actually paying, because it's quite opaque, it's quite hard to understand. And often you end up paying for something you can't actually use. So definitely a watch point there. In terms of what we've got coming on in the future, so we've built up this intellectual property, which is this cash flow forecasting capability that we've been sharing with borrowers and lenders on our platform. What we're doing next is actually sharing that to any business anywhere in the world that is either using the Xero cloud accounting platform or the QuickBooks Online accounting platform. So they can actually benefit from that insight that we've generated and actually get a free cash flow forecast from Growth Street. So just go to insight.growthstreet.co.uk to sign up for that.
That's interesting because you mentioned Xero midpoint to it in LFP 050 for their peer-to-peer foreign currency exchange also stuck in these platforms. And I think there's a huge value, like Market Invoice have found with Sage, of being a button in somebody's accounting platform. Much simpler than having to go around and tell the whole world that you're out there.
Absolutely. So it's definitely a marketing asset to be able to do that. But I think where we differentiate ourselves is most are using that plugin as a way to streamline the onboarding journey. What we're actually using that data for is a consistent, constant evaluation of the business performance and using the insight that's actually quite passively held by the business to actively share it back with them and say, this is what this information is actually telling us. And being able to help businesses make better decisions on that basis.
Yes, I think that's such a wonderful point to end on, which is that one of the things that's often misunderstood is giving away content for free. He says, thinking about himself on the show. And the other is the usefulness of providing extra value, because it's the extra value that will keep you going to places. I don't know, for the sake of argument, let's say they've got three pizza places nearby and one of them's just nice to you. You would go there for choice over the other two. And in this case, it's not just being nice, it's actually being useful to the business. And a lot of SMEs are very busy doing what they do without actually having the strength in depth, etc., to do the clever analytics.
Absolutely. But it's the ability to provide personal, useful insight that's contextually rich, specific to them, rather than generic, you know, throwaway advice, which doesn't necessarily apply to the business. So many people make the mistake that all businesses behave in a similar way. Actually, it's a very heterogeneous population, and you have to look very carefully at the individual business to make the right judgment calls.
Yes, I think it's a bit like sort of old-fashioned racism. I don't mean racism in the sort of modern PC of terrible. In the past, in the absence of data, when not many people yonks ago went to France or met many French people, the concept of French and a generalisation would just be a working assumption you make, because the French are different from the Germans and the Spanish by and large. But in these days, where one meets more individuals from abroad and in the context of the company, one can see through the generalities of, horse stables or something like that, to actually the individual ones. You can actually treat people as individuals because you've got the basic data on them.
Absolutely, and I think that's something that we think about, is that if we are successful here in the UK and we look out to other markets we could go to in the future, what we're solving for are two opportunities that are international opportunities. The Basel III capital rules are international. The availability of performance data and accounting data particularly is also an international opportunity. But looking at the local flavour, looking at the local market to understand, is this a pressing need for businesses in that market? Do the rules and regulations fit what we've been able to achieve in the UK? And I think we have to take a step back and recognise the environment that's been created here in the UK for marketplace lending, full stop, is such a positive development that's enabled this innovation. And I think other markets aren't necessarily similarly set up to be successful. So it's certainly one of the areas that we think about, the local context and local flavour, when looking overseas to where we could go next.
Absolutely. And that's a good point to wrap up on. The need for variable amounts of financing, unknown at the present, exists in every country around the world. The idea of marketplaces as a solution, done badly, it's a pain, but done well, it's extremely invaluable and does last for centuries. So there's plenty of opportunity out there. And certainly, I think it's a very simple thing at one level that you're doing. It's, as always, hard to do something simple well, but you're providing overdrafts, let's use the word, and extremely important given the context that you say in the UK, overdraft provision by banks, for a bunch of reasons, has fallen massively. So for those people out there who know of SMEs who are falling into the crack and for whom invoice discounting doesn't work or is unattractive, then I'd really recommend that they contact you guys, James, at Growth Street and try it out for themselves. So thank you for that, and I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app, or sign up at londonfintechpodcast.com for email alerts and new episodes. Live long and prosper.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad, come away from the city, but with the faces so grey, with the pain of the everyday. We are wild like the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me, 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 watch the firelight dance with me.